All right, welcome to Vegas, Mix 11, Channel 9 Live. Very special guest, Dean Hakamovich.
Great to see you.
Giorgio,
hey,
how are you doing?
Good.
So,
to be here.
Great keynote. You made some incredible announcements and interesting things. Tell us a little bit about, like, sort of the biggest themes of the day for you.
Well, we talked about three things. We showed a lot of great examples that the development community has written and is live on the web now of HTML5 and just how that runs on Windows with i9 when you have native hardware acceleration. We talked about a lot of the patterns that we've used in the development of i9 around engaging the community and standards bodies, for example. And we finished by showing IE10 Platform Preview 1 in action and some of the standard support it does and what that native HTML5 looks like.
It's amazing. I mean, you guys just released IE9 RTW.
It's about four weeks ago, I think.
I mean, do the developers sleep over in your building, Matt?
Well, you know, we're only 3 weeks into the dev cycle. So, you know, there's a little bit of time there to finish up IE9
sure.
and get all the worldwide releases out.
Excellent, man.
Still working that.
Very good. So, Giorgio actually has done a few of the demos that you showed today, which were amazing.
Yeah, actually, I'm the one that has the fun to play with this stuff, right? So all of the stuff that these guys build, and I'm the one that take it and try to break it and try to make it better and just build demos. So it's a great fun.
Excellent. So let's talk a little bit about performance, because performance was already relatively amazing in IE9 RTW with HTML running on the GPU.
Right.
What have you guys done in this PP1 of IE10?
Well, you know, why don't I think it's more interesting to hear like your take on it because you can code into it, so
yeah.
It's great. So whatever performance work we did, what really matters is how it plays out when developers use it.
And so my experience is that I always try to push the boundaries, right? We get an idea and we try to build something amazing that has never been built before. And what IE give us is like an amazing performance.
Mm.
So with IE9, we can like really build any scenario, and it's kind of like interesting when like we start building the experience and planning the experience. Every time we think, shall we like reduce the number of videos on this page, or shall we reduce the number of canvases? And actually, the answer is no. You can go as far as you go as you want, and this stuff runs very smoothly.
Excellent.
So you know, you asked about performance. I think that what's what's interesting here is that there's still untapped performance in the code base, if that makes sense. So we're adding. You know, if you think about some of the effects that you've been using, whether it's the CSS 3D transforms or the CSS 3 transitions, did you see the two videos boxed in at the
absolutely.
End?
Absolutely.
Like, that's using 10-15% less CPU than the other guys running just one of them.
Interesting.
And so as we add more functionality, I think the performance characteristics are going to I'm going to make an engineering promise I shouldn't. I'm just saying
excellent.
The performance characteristics are really good.
Yes, they are. They're amazing. So this is Channel 9 Live.
We want
to take questions from the Niners out in the real world. We have one from Anurajan.
Right.
Does IE10 preview run side by side to IE9?
Absolutely. That is exactly how we designed it. So the same way that IE9 platform previews ran side by side with IE8 and even IE9 pre-releases, the IE10 platform preview runs side by side with IE9, and actually that's how it worked on one of the machines I demoed from. I showed shipping IE9, and I also showed the IE10 platform preview.
Excellent. So tweet your questions to @CH9Live. So you mentioned the secret sauce of HTML5 in IE9. What does that mean, secret sauce?
Well, I think that developers have all these dreams and hopes and aspirations, and they're so used to cutting back on them because of the limitations of how browsers run HTML. Browsers are like, wow, I really wanted to do this, but I won't really. I need to cut back on this. And Giorgio was telling the story around. I can't remember which demo it was that you were building, and you guys just kept going.
Yeah, so it's all a matter of time, right? Dean ship a new browser, and then it's a matter of time about how far we can go. In one of the demos, we had like new features, amazing feature every day. And at some point, we had to say, wow, like this can be really, really amazing. And you will see more and more of those demos over time. Something that I love about Internet Explorer, when you say secret sauce, is that hardware acceleration doesn't apply just to one tag or just to one element. And so when you look at the SVG girl or the Bon Jovi or the Pac-Man, you see that there is CSS, HTML, SVG, and there is a composition of those technologies together, and all of them together, they're even faster. Mm. And that's probably my secret sauce in those demos.
Very interesting.
Maybe one of the take on secret sauce is, once you learn HTML, it you know, you can just keep reusing it. The thing that, I find fascinating on these demos is that I can bring up view source and learn.
Yes.
Right? And so there's something on, you learned a skill and you get to apply it and reapply it. So, oh, you know CSS? Well, great. If you know the CSS patterns, there's a whole new world of technologies you can now go and use.
Excellent. Beautiful. So, got some more questions. Where can I get that bitch in IE 910? That's a, you always wear these killer shirts. Where
Thank
can
you.
We get those, man?
Thank you. Well, this is the only one in the world right now. I think the the next box that comes in is going to go to the actual engineering team. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you what, if you get a hold of Charles, I will make sure that you have 10 IE10 shirts to give out to the Niners. No offense to nine, but it's 10.
So hey, man, sometimes you've got to step up.
Right.
Got to increment.
Okay.
So why don't you add an option for the font rendering problem? What about acting on feedback? So this actually, before we get to that, I just want to do one quick thing. From the very first platform preview of IE9, you guys have been really interacting closely with the community, the developer community, listening to their feedback. It's the reason you're doing this. So let's first talk about how you work with feedback and then get to the rendering thing.
Well, you know, that I would love
to
do that.
Okay.
But at the same time, Iron Arc has this question, and I want to like respectfully just go into and then do
the
philosophy stuff, right?
Okay.
Hey, what about acting on feedback? I'm all for acting on feedback. Like, we are engaged. If you knew how many hours a week we spend in our hallway going through, reading the comments, if you knew how much time I spend on Twitter looking at this. On the font issue, here's what's really interesting to me about the font issue. There's a set of people who are, you know, on a scale from 1 to 10, around 11 in terms of not being happy with it. I get that. What we're trying to do is figure out right now whether it's something on the people's machines or something in the person's physiology, because we're having a tough time figuring out exactly what it is around the characteristics. And so, frankly, I'll tell you what, if you know how to get a hold of him, he knows how to get a hold of me, I would like to dig in to understand better exactly what the characteristics are. Because again, I hear you. I get you're upset about it. And you know, there's a small set of people really vocal, and we actually have a set of folks in the hallway who are digging in to try to figure out exactly what changes will make a difference.
Excellent. So we're getting a lot of questions in. This is good. So,
okay. So I'm doing the golden retriever as I read the questions. So the definition of native HTML.
Yes. UX lover. Thank you.
Right. So the question was, please clarify the definition of native HTML. I interpret as using DirectX hardware acceleration versus OpenGL. Okay, so when we say native HTML, think about the collection of attributes that was on the slide. So you could say it starts with hardware acceleration. It starts with respecting same markup. Think about the process of not churning and randomizing developers. Native HTML means that you can really use the language to its fullest, and it will take advantage of the native characteristics of the underlying operating system. In some ways, characterizing native might be more interesting in terms of what the alternative is. Every layer, every abstraction that you put between the HTML and the and what's running the hardware, that's non-native. And all those layers become problems for reliability, for performance, for UI. Think about all the abstraction layers you'd put in there to deal with touch on a web page or in a browser. So by native, it really has to be native to the operating system. You have to specialize to make the most out of the web. To get back to the OpenGL DX thing, just for the sake of Niners in context, There's all this great conversation on this. OpenGL is one way of trying to drive a GPU, and DirectX is another. And you know, you can get a PhD at this point. There are actually PhDs I've talked with about the differences. It's not a matter of this or that. It's a matter of, on the device, how are you natively taking advantage of everything it can possibly offer?
Yeah.
And you know, maybe a good example of this is, think about the demo that had an HTML5 video and canvases using the 3D transitions, 3D transforms on the side, and how sluggish that felt, right? And then being able to show 10 canvases going full tilt, right, with SVG animating in the background, and using the scroll bar as an audio mixer, which is nicely done, that's native.
Awesome. And actually, like, I meet a lot of developers, right? And I met one guy in France called Gerard. And he built this awesome framework in JavaScript where you can create your own 3D rooms. And that framework has been used like in China to create a museum, and it's been used in Europe to create like a cinema where you can navigate in 3D, right. And everything is just like...
It's on beauty of the web.
Exactly, so it's on beauty of the web. Mm-hmm. And it's like 100 lines of JavaScript. And that JavaScript being hardware accelerated, that feels native.
Excellent.
And I'll tell you, you know, how you can recognize a native application? Press F11. Go full screen, mm-hmm. and you will forget that you are running inside the browser. That's right. What native application is.
Right. Excellent. There are so many examples on beauty of the web that you know you run them, and if you hit F11 and you're just using them full screen, mm-hmm. you lose track that it's a web page. Mm. And this one time, there's someone I was showing something to, and I had it full screen, and there's this gorgeous graphics, and then just to mess with it, I went Control T, mm. and got a new tab up, and yeah. you know went over to Hotmail.
Nice.
And he's just watched his brain melt.
Amazing.
It's just unexpected. So
so tweet your questions to AskCH9 Live. We got Dean here, IU10, you released the first preview. Giorgio Sardo, who's the master of demos, who does a lot of the coding for these things.
Giorgio is the master of coding. I have a full-time job doing the demos for what he writes.
Excellent.
So the question is, how will you prioritize features for implementation in IE10? Hmm. Well, look, there are a lot of factors that go in, and frankly, there are a lot of different kinds of features. There are underlying platform features, CSS3, we showed a lot of CSS3, we showed ECMAScript 5 strict mode. There are user interface features. Think about jump list or support for notifications. So there are lots of different kinds of features out there. When I think about the platform features, which is probably what most folks at Nix and most Channel 9ers really care about, we have a few ways of looking at it. One is we go through and we look at what's in use on the web, and we look at scenarios that aren't possible, and we look at what's hard for developers and what they want to do. And then we use some calculus, and we do. Frankly, we also read Channel 9 forums a bunch,
yes,
and we read all the comments on the blogs. It's a great way to
totally.
Make sure that you're heard.
Excellent. Keep tweeting questions,
Token,
people.
Retweet. New is cool, but how can we get rid of IE6/7? That stuff is a huge burden for us web devs. I don't know how to agree more unless I use NSFW language. So we have people in Redmond at Microsoft whose full-time job it is to drive IE6 to zero. There was a funeral about a year ago. We sent flowers to IE6. Mm. I completely agree and understand the pain of supporting IE6 and 7. We are still servicing IE6 and IE7, so I can tell you we do 150 different flavors of IE across languages approximately every 8 weeks. I think I might have more personal reasons why I want IE6 and IE7 to go to zero, frankly, than you can imagine. What we're doing to drive IE6 and 7 to zero really starts from making sure that everyone who can possibly get on IE8 can get on IE8. Just for the sake of full disclosure, there are just some folks running IE6 and 7, and they're not going to go away. And I had to find a way to be zen about this. I'll make the story brief. I know you've heard me tell this. I was in the hospital some number of years ago, and they do some imaging, mm-hmm. and they wheeled a machine over. It said, "Do you want to see these images we took?"
Yeah.
I was like, you know, okay. And they bring it up, Control-Alt-Delete, and it's in IE6. And that's the hospital's internal nuclear imaging application. And so sometimes the old versions will just take a while to go away. It's the
Absolutely.
Reality. Right. When is IE10 targeted to be released? Well, we did Platform Preview 1. We talked about a cadence of updates about every 8 to 12 weeks. And mm-hmm. it will take a lot of feedback. Of course, you know, we will look at all the, you know, at the bug database, at the blog post, and then we will choose the right time to release it based on how much progress we make. It'll be interesting to see what folks think and how they like the standard support. How hard, next question,
yes.
Brettvich, how hard was it to get IE10 on ARM? Do you want to answer this one?
No, why don't you do it?
Okay, so... So the demonstration that you saw today with Steven and the Borders and Radius demo was running on a new architecture of microprocessor for Windows. And it's ARM or SoC for System on Chip might be a better, broader way to describe it.
Okay.
Intel's got some great work there. You know, we saw Sandy Bridge. There's a lot of work all over the industry.
Mm-hmm.
That's actually a preview of the next version of Windows. And that was something that was shown at CES. some time ago, and that's just part of the work that we do, looking forward. And you can actually find video, I think, from one of the CES keynotes with Steve Ballmer showing an array of different ARM devices. And, you know, some of them have got some Microsoft Office applications, some of them are running IE.
Excellent.
Oh, I love this question. How to keep UI designers aware of possibilities? This is your life.
I get it. So I will tell you how I learn about IE. So first place, IE test drive. Yeah. So every time there is a new release of a platform preview on the IE test drive, there is at least one demo that showcases exactly how to target that specific features. Right. So today we published the CSS gradients demo, the grid, the flexbox, the sync mode demos. We are at Mix. I personally saw all of the next 20 sessions that we will have in the next 2 days about HTML5, and I think that's a great resource. Mm. And then, as Dean said, looking at other websites and just going to the beauty of the web and explore what other partners and designers build, that's a great way to learn and see like the tricks and how to play with technology.
Excellent.
Right. I'm going to strongly recommend going to Beauty of the Web.
Yeah.
And going to IE Test Drive is huge. I have to. Do you have time for like one quick story? Are we over? Okay. So
no.
At the IE9 release event in Austin at South by Southwest about 4 weeks ago, I had a great seat because I got to go to the side and I had a chair on the side and I could look at the audience. And as we were showing the things that developers and designers built, we had a lot of them in the room. In the front rows. What was great is when someone's work was being shown, they just lit up. You could see the pride on their face, right? Mm-hmm. And I could look out and I could see six other developers and designers squinting, looking at the screen going, huh, that's really cool. Could I do that? How could I do that? How could I make that better? And it was just
awesome.
Fun to see how developers riff off of each other and find more things to do. I stronger in going to Beauty of the Web. And I strongly recommend going to IE Test Drive to lift some good samples.
Excellent. Keep tweeting your questions at CH9 Live. I love Microsoft. This is going to be a softball, man.
Any chance of autocorrect or spelling checker in IE10? You're going to write that one down and mail it to me.
Here we go.
And when I get back to Redmond tomorrow, we'll take the call. I think it's a great suggestion. I have to tell you, historically, I'm very excited about it. I actually got to work on the first version of autocorrect in Word 6 for Windows. I'm a huge fan, and we'll see what we can do. Just for context, on autocorrect and spell checking, one of the fun challenges is that we, at least you know here at Mix, it's a very U.S.-centric, a very English, U.S.-English even, right? Like, we even have Canadians on our hallway. So, you know, we understand that spelling is actually a very worldwide phenomenon.
Of course.
Not just for flavors of English, but even, you know, I think about the number of multilingual things that you work with. It's so exciting when that first W is actually World Wide Web,
yep.
And you want to put a spell checker, an autocorrect, the degree which you need to make it work in 50, 60-plus languages to really be helpful.
Absolutely.
So it's a great suggestion.
Can I take the next question?
Yeah, this is yours.
So this question is, what tooling support is available for HTML5 designers from Microsoft?
Right.
And actually, we're going to cover tooling during Mix, so we will have a few sessions about tools.
Okay.
I'll tell you like how I, with my partners, develop applications. So first of all, Visual Studio Service Pack 1 allow you to have as the IntelliSense for HTML5, so you can write straight HTML5. Expression Web also introduced the IntelliSense for HTML5. And there is also a new tool from Expression Web called Super Preview. And this has been updated just like probably this morning or a few hours ago.
Yeah.
And it allows you to preview like your website in IE9, in Chrome, in Firefox, in Safari, running on Mac. So you're on Windows and you can send your site to the cloud and it will preview your site on other platforms, all side by side.
Nice.
So these are very powerful tools. On top of this, there are other tools, obviously, from the community. For example, there is one called Inkscape. It's a free tool from the community. It allows you to work with SVG.
Okay.
So it allows you to do a lot of things with SVG, and it just saves to SVG. So all of these are great options. And obviously, this is kind of like the obvious one, but F12. F12 is like a magical tool. Like
yes.
F12, like you cannot imagine how many things you can do. And actually, we will have a session just about that, and we will share a few tricks. And maybe, I'm not sure if you've seen all of them, but we discover a few ways to work around the F12 tool and make it even more compelling than Firebug. So keep an eye.
All right, so I actually have a request to the C9 community.
Yes.
So you got there's a post for Channel 9 which lists off everything Giorgio just walked through.
Okay.
But it would be great to hear back what tools you want and which tools you use, because that's really powerful feedback for us to figure out what the next thing we do is. IE9 had some tremendous improvements to the development tools, like the networking perf, et cetera. We're losing Georgia.
We're losing Georgia.
Okay, have a good time at that
session.
I'll
see you soon.
Yeah,
okay.
Good job, man.
All right, so I'm sorry, it's all well and fine.
So you were just asking Niner's question?
Right, so the question is, after you post, here's what Georgia said, it would be great to hear back. Here are the tools that we use and like. And here are the ones that, wow, we really wish that there was a tool to do this or this.
Awesome.
I think that'd be great feedback.
Okay.
All right, so it's all well and fine, question.
Yeah.
It's even a retweet, which is awesome. It's all well and fine that I10 can render 10 3D canvases of Justin Bieber. It actually wasn't Justin Bieber, for what it's worth.
Yeah,
at the same time, it was Mike Tompkins, who's unbelievably skilled. At the same time, where are the business apps? That's a great question. The business apps are waiting for you developers to write them. I can think of two or three amazing business apps that that I use on a daily basis. I mean, the Office web applications, if you go into Hotmail, you know, there's Excel web access and Word web access, and those are amazing, right? Those are fully featured productivity apps. They're up there. So, you know, if I think about graphing in Excel, that's even better in the web browser. More to the point of your question, there are a bunch of business applications that are just waiting to happen in the browser. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I would be so excited to demo some of those the next time we have IE at an event.
Sure.
At the same time, there's a comment a developer made. I think it was at the RC event. It was Skinner. Grant Skinner made this comment. Look, if you can write a game in something, you can write anything in something. So maybe some of the point of showing 10 canvases playing HTML5 video with some 3D on them is to prove the point that there's so much capacity waiting to be tapped here. Why does my expense report take so long to submit? I don't know.
Yes.
Like, why am I waiting on these seemingly simpler things? Well, that's something we want to work with developers on. Right.
Absolutely. Keep asking questions.
Yeah. So are you, IE team, trying to position IE910 to become the standard rather than match with other popular browsers? So feel free to, like, tweet this again if I'm not getting the question right. The point is that the standard is actually what happens through the standards process. No one gets to stand up and say, here's a standard, and I'm just moving on in life. There's a standards process with the W3C for HTML5, with ECMA for what we all commonly refer to as JavaScript, but it's actually ECMAScript 5. And so the standards process is something that we respect. And so the standards process involves consensus, it involves the working groups, it involves building prototypes.
Yep.
If you look at the Flexbox and Grid demonstrations we did today, those are proposals that we took to the working group at the W3C some time ago to say, look, here's how we think it makes sense to do these kinds of additions to HTML5. What we're trying to do here, right, is have IE deliver the best experience of the web. And we want to do that by having a great native implementation that takes advantage of the hardware, that respects, say, markup. I mean, I can just tick down that list again. And to me, that is what defines the standard.
Excellent.
Will Microsoft, all IE10 new features and server products, SharePoint, Nav, et cetera, great question. I think that there are server products, and then there are services, and essentially those services and servers update at their own rate. We work very closely with them to make sure they can take advantage, just like every other developer. So, for example, during the demo, we showed Hotmail showing an unread mail notification.
Yes.
Right. So you can pin Hotmail, and it will tell you how many unread messages you have, which is great. Facebook will tell you when you have something new going on the page. Mm-hmm. That's totally possible with all these server products as well. Frankly, not Microsoft. So if you work on a server product somewhere other than Microsoft and you're not sure how to take advantage of IE9, call Charles. He'll get a hold of me. We'll fly out.
Rock and roll.
We'll help you out.
Keep asking questions. Here's another one from I Love Microsoft.
Any upcoming major or minor update to IE9 before the release of IE10? Well, I said this earlier. We update over 150 different flavors of Internet Explorer every 8 weeks. We put out security updates and, frankly, overall trust updates. Issues with reliability, performance go up at that cadence. In terms of additional raw platform functionality, the thing that we've heard consistently is that developers want a solid platform to target. And as you shift the platform around, I can't do it any better than that WebSockets video that we showed during the keynote. So maybe a really good thing to do would be to post a link. Have you seen that video before?
I have seen the Sockets video.
The WebSockets video is a great example of when you try to trickle out platform changes, you just end up thrashing developers. You just have to keep rewriting their sites and reworking their sites.
But this actually brings up a good point about the fact that you do have sort of this labs thing. Can you talk about that?
Right, that's a great point. So HTML5 Labs has got pre-release implementations of a lot of experimental standards that are under construction, that are not stable, WebSockets, IndexedDB, and that's a great sandbox or playground for these up-and-coming technologies. And HTML5 Labs, it's something that we developed really, after hearing the community's feedback around, look, there are all these different web technologies under development. We understand that you're not going to put some of them into the mainline browser, but we want to experiment with these. And HTML5 Labs is exactly where that happens.
Excellent. Well, keep tweeting your questions, Niners. We have Dean Hakamovic here. We'd like to hear from you. One question I have for you, Dean, is when you think about what you've done when you say native HTML or native HTML5,
right?
I mean, you have, in some sense, made a GPU in HTML,
right?
CSS.
Right.
Can you talk about that? Well, why don't we, can we make that any clearer to people, or is that just obvious?
Or am I wrong? I think you're right. The thing to keep in mind is that we all conceive of the web in our own way. Like, everyone's got their own model for the web and how the internet works, right? And the thing that is powerful, that is most powerful, I think, is when you can take someone to a web page and it shatters their assumptions. Mm. It shatters what they think the web could be about.
Yeah.
And it was one thing to just have web pages that had bold and italic and photos. Oh my God, there's a photo and a video. And then you go through and you see some of what is possible on a web page, and it just shatters your imagination. I'll pick on the director's cut example. Yeah. The first time I saw that, I just started laughing. And it's a video editor. It's a full-fledged, I want to put together a video. And so you're watching like 16 videos playing at the same time. You're dragging and dropping them. You're rearranging them. You're previewing. You're putting in styles and transitions. Mm-hmm. And it's a web page.
Yeah.
And all that's possible because you're taking advantage. Your markup, your standards markup, your CSS, your HTML5, your JavaScript is taking full advantage of every shred of power that the silicon on that Windows PC has. All right.
That's awesome.
Questions?
Great.
Do you find it funny that now the other browser vendors are proprietary, which they yelled at Microsoft for in the past? Do I find it funny? Well, there's this great movie that has a great line in it, and this character says, "It's a cruel irony." I think it's funny. I think it's both funny peculiar and funny haha. It's interesting. The web's supposed to be open, and there is this odd irony when you find that there is markup that runs in only one browser.
Yes.
That kind of seems to, go around the purpose. You see this in other aspects as well, and this is a little bit afield from web design, but I think it's interesting. Mm. So IE9 has this feature called tracking protection, web tracking protection, to help keep you and your privacy where you want it. Exactly who do you want to share information with? And so there's a standard tracking protection list. We submitted the document to the W3C. We want to standardize it. It turns out that there are folks who've got tracking protection lists published in a different format, which is not the W3C standard. And
yes,
some of them are publishing the W3C standard now, making them available to IE folks, and some aren't. And that there's some irony there, too.
Ah, cool. Great. We got more questions.
So from IE 910 on, can we expect to see a much quicker cadence release schedule in order to desensitize users to upgrading more often?
Yes.
Wow. Okay, so I want to actually answer the question, then riff. A quicker release schedule in order to desensitize users. So It turns out that there really are, frankly, I think, at least two release schedules. There's the cadence with which we develop a new browser, and then there's the cadence with which people pick it up. You could say that there's a development cadence separate from a deployment cadence. If you are watching this video live or, you know, can, you are a very special person. Your deployment cadence is approximately infinite. You will install things, you will love it, you will enjoy every moment of it. And there are a lot of other people who have a much slower deployment cadence. Mm. It's interesting because as technology enthusiasts, we all want everyone we know to have the infinite benefits of every piece of technology.
Sure.
Now, you and I live on the bleeding edge.
Yeah.
We eat beta dog food,
mm-hmm.
right? This isn't what everyone in the world wants. It's very hard to have that empathetic, mm-hmm. you know, chemical kick in and
sure.
then say, look, I'm enjoying this pre-release software experience,
mm-hmm.
and it's not production ready. It's not ready for prime time.
Yeah.
And, you know, you actually want something that is totally rock solid, just works, whether it's a nuclear imaging application in the hospital
yep.
that, you know, you don't want to have too much excitement. That I don't want excitement from
yeah.
that application. And so I hear you around release cadence, and it's very important to realize that not everyone is shaped like us. And so we are going to have this platform preview cadence that I talked about, and that's going to be super, super valuable for the development and design
yes.
communities. And then the deployment cadence, yeah, that's something that we're working on, nothing to really talk about right now.
Excellent.
Hey, so what's with all the empty space in the hash I9 window title? Why not stick the tabs over there? Still pretty slim, though. So first, thank you. I think, you know, being both, you know, rich in terms of platform functionality and skinny in terms of UI is a great place to be.
Okay.
Very few people get to be rich and skinny. I think I9 is in a good spot there. In terms of not putting the tabs being in the title bar or not,
mm-hmm.
It becomes a challenge for people who are manipulating the window. And so there are a lot of times when people are just trying to grab the window and move it around. And if the tabs are up there, then they end up tearing their tabs all over the place. And mm-hmm. so we built a lot of different prototypes and models. And I hear you around the, wow, it looks like wasted pixels.
Mm-hmm.
And usually when I have that, I kind of go maximize, and it works out. Because otherwise, there's not a convenient spot to just grab the whole window by.
Excellent. Okay. Keep tweeting questions to @CH1Live.
How different/same are Windows Phone 7 i9 and Desktop i9?
That's a great question.
So glad you asked. So basically, the core browsing engine, the browsing platform, is the same. We're, you know, building out of the same tree. It's a very exciting engineering thing that makes me think we should probably blog about how we built it.
Yes.
So that would be a fun thing to do. We'll do the blog and we'll
All
do
right.
the C9 interview.
Another
I'm just signing
great.
Up. So the underlying platform functionality, same APIs, same test suite, so that should be the same. On a phone, you've got a very different set of characteristics on the user interface. And so the phone guys are here at Mix.
Mm-hmm.
I hope that there's a C9 session where they get to talk about what it was like to consume the i9 browsing platform,
sure
browsing engine,
yes.
and then how they built around it. So it should be a consistent experience for folks.
Absolutely.
Da-da-da. Okay, so Inspector Aid. There seems to be much boasting about i9 HTML5 support on Mix 11 today.
Yeah.
Why is there no i9 support for the new HTML5 input elements? There are a lot of HTML5 input elements. I think some of them actually are. I looked last week. I'm pretty sure that we actually support some of the input elements. It comes down in i9 to actually wanting to finish a product, right? And there's a CNET reporter, I think, who wrote, I was very happy to see the support for standards they have ship now
mm-hmm.
rather than waiting and having more later.
Sure.
And so I think input elements are a great thing. I think we're engaged on that specification. We're working through some of the ambiguities and the enemies of same markup on it.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll see where we can go there with IE10. Will MSFT push IE updates to force users into a common experience? Do you think the benefits of a common UX outweigh standard execution? I am so happy you asked the question this way. If you guys could leave it up on the word thing, just because I want to refer back to this.
Okay.
Will we force users into a common experience? No. Here's one of the key mantras that we have around here. Users are in control. It's your PC. You paid for it. It's yours. If you work at a company and the IT department actually bought it for you, hey, You're part of that domain. They get to do things to your machine. But if you bought it and it's yours, you're in control. What software do you want on it? Do you want updates? Do you not want updates? Do you want malware protection? We want to give you malware protection. But if you want to opt out, that's okay. Frankly, I'd prefer you took our malware protection. You know, the web would be better. We're not going to force users to do anything. It turns out that Windows users aren't just Windows users. They're Windows customers. Mm-hmm. And as a customer, you get to choose. So we're not going to force that. I get how that is somewhat maddening for developers and designers who want a common platform everywhere.
Sure.
And we'll talk about that more. Okay, so do you think the benefits of common user experience outweigh standard execution? I'm sorry, DiscoreX, if you could retweet that, because I kind of think a common UX... UX is a good thing, and standard execution is a good thing. So I'm not sure the tension that I'm supposed to play King Solomon on. So do that again. I'm sorry, I'm being dense. Hey, it's Chris Perillo. Any plans to bring IE back to the Mac? Hey, Dean. Hey, Chris. Good to hear from you. We build IE as a part of Windows for Windows customers. And, you know, we build it to be native to Windows. You know, we build it from the ground up to be native HTML5 and built from the ground up for Windows. We built IE for the Mac back in the day when that was the only way for Macintosh customers to get what at the time was called DHTML and then was called AJAX and is now lovingly referred to as Web 2.0.
Yeah.
The first browser that showed up. It actually did all this kind of Ajax-y, you know, Gmail-ish, Hotmail-ish, all this interactive stuff on the Mac was IE. And so we put IE on the Mac to get those standards adopted and get it in there. I think that if you have bought a Macintosh, you've made an operating system decision, and your operating system provider has given you a browser, and other folks are doing that. You know, we did demos at South by Southwest of comparative performance, Mac browsers and Windows browsers, and it was more extreme.
Sure.
Than what we showed on stage.
Well, it's Windows Internet Explorer, right? That's
right.
The name.
Hey, the only problem with IE now, don't say only, really, come on, is a poor add-on ecosystem. Could we see any changes? Also, better performance in IE 64-bit.
Interesting.
Hey, let me take this in reverse order. So, IE 64-bit, turns out that IE 64-bit actually has a relatively low usage rate. I love 64-bit Windows. All my desktops, all my laptops, like they're all running 64-bit. 32-bit IE is the default on these systems for a variety of reasons. The mainstream web experience today requires plugins like Flash and others, and so 32-bit's the default.
Okay.
And so we put all of our performance energy into the 32-bit version, and so depending on what benchmark you run, you might see some wonky numbers on the 64-bit.
Yeah.
Noted, we're on it. And the other question is around the add-on ecosystem. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's interesting to talk about the add-on ecosystem. On the one hand, there are a lot of... strong add-ons for IE. Another way to look at that add-on ecosystem is we look at the most requested add-ons and then we build them in natively. We build them in natively with security and performance. So I think there have been some blogs, some blog postings in the last week or two from the Mozilla guys around some of the issues they're having with their add-on ecosystem and the performance impact on Firefox of different add-ons. And it's very exciting to read that because there's a very healthy conversation around the impact of add-ons and performance. And so just to go back to track and protection list, it's interesting. One of the add-ons discussed there is AdBlock Plus. What's really neat is a lot of the AdBlock Plus lists, the things that actually make AdBlock Plus valuable, are published in the W3C proposed standard tracking protection list format. And so if you run IE9, effectively you can consume a lot of those lists natively in IE9 with better performance without any of the startup impact.
Okay.
So it'd be interesting to figure out, hey, here are the key add-ons that we really wish we saw, because there actually are a bunch of them for IE.
Excellent. More questions.
Will there be an official public process for submitting feedback regarding UI and features? Yes. It is the same one we had for IE9. There's a bug database, Connect.
Yes.
We live in that database. We look at every single item there, and we deal with it before we will ship a release.
Excellent.
Okay, the literal question. Why remove plugins when the site is pinned? This is dictating bad stuff. Okay, when you pin a site, right, why are add-ons not run in a pinned site?
Yes, why not?
Okay. Typically, add-ons, you think about like your, like, I'll just go with the eBay toolbar. eBay toolbar is a delightful thing if you're a hardcore eBay customer. It turns out that pinning a site is saying, I want... A deep experience, almost an like I want this to be like an app.
Yeah, okay.
Right? And it's interesting that when you install one of these web toolbars that are trying to do things across the web at large, mm-hmm. it's not like you'd expect it to show up in Excel. It's not like you'd expect it to show up in Paintbrush. Mm-hmm. It's not like you'd expect, you know, just go through that list.
Sure.
So part of treating the website much more like an application, it has an icon down in the taskbar, it can program a jump list, is saying, wow, you know, now it's about, so it's about the C, I've pinned C9.
Yeah.
I want it to be a rich, complete C9 experience. And having this other toolbar impinge on it, mm-hmm. it's breaking the fourth wall.
Yes.
Right, trying to respect the site being a deeper as an experience.
All right, excellent.
How are you speeding up the adoption of new browser versions? Well, there are a few things that we do speeding up the adoption of new browser versions. One, we work a lot with developers because it turns out that the more cool stuff you build,
yes.
the more motivated every consumer is to go off and get a browser that can run your stuff even better.
We love that.
We put features into the browser to make your sites more compelling. So if you think about jump lists and notifications, if your sites are more compelling in I9, people love your sites, they're going to be faster to get I9. We offer new versions of IE through Windows Update and give users that choice. And you know, we'll market a little bit too.
Excellent.
We'll put some marketing in there too. Hey, but for what it's worth, we are open to ideas.
Yeah.
There is no shortage of good ways to get people to upgrade their browser. And if the C9ers and folks ask some questions, again, he knows how to get a hold of me. We
yes.
get together regularly. I would love to see it. So we can do a top five list of top five C9 ideas to get more folks to I9.
Awesome, okay. Man. So we got about 5 more minutes. We're going to wrap
okay.
up. Ask questions out in Twitter world, at CH9. Ask Dean questions about IE10 or IE9. And let's go. All right. So we're going to wait for questions to come. Give us a little...
There's a question. Tracking protection allows me to block all third-party ads. What has been the reaction of advertisers? Let's leave this one up because I like my memory's going. So tracking protection
yes.
allows you, enables you to block third-party content. There's no way for a piece of code to know what is an ad or not. We just don't. The way tracking protection works is by saying, here is a list of websites that I want to block content from when I'm not at that website. So when I go to your website,
yes.
I get all your stuff.
Yes.
But when I go to, you know, C9 Bobblehead,
yeah.
right, and they have some stuff from you, I might say, hey, I don't want it from there.
Okay.
What's the point? Well, there are a lot of ways to track people on the web. If you go and read the Wikipedia article about tracking pixels, mm-hmm. For example, or web beacons, right? Those are really interesting articles. And the point is that there are all these ways of tracking people on the web. And one of the most pernicious ones is that people don't know when they're visiting your site yeah. all the extra stuff that I'm picking up on that can track me as I browse across the web. And we've got some fun videos around this that you can watch. So the point of tracking protection is to block that third-party content. And you can make your own list, because all of you are geeks. That's great. You're enthusiasts. Make your own list. Or you can go and find a bunch of lists that other people have published, because they've gone through and said, look, I have objective criteria. Here's who I want to block.
Yes.
And so the feedback, now to get to the question, is what's been the reaction? And they'll say, the question is, what has been the reaction of advertisers? I'll just say, what's been the reaction overall? Well, we've basically gotten two big criticisms okay. around tracking protection. One is that it does too much, and the other is that it does too little.
Really?
Right. So there are privacy advocates who feel very, very strongly around all the other things that we could do to help protect people's privacy. And they're informed and they're passionate and we're having conversations with them. It's a very powerful community of very smart people. Mm-hmm. Then there are other folks. There's a large ecosystem around data and data mining. And you know there are some extraordinarily legitimate business reasons for this. Like a lot of people treat these people like, you know, there's something wrong. There's a extraordinarily legitimate and good business out there. So people
sure.
can optimize their sites and do performance tuning. There are a variety of these things. And so we're having conversations across both of them. I think this is a great example to go back to web standards. There's a meeting coming up in April of the W3C. So the World Wide Web Consortium has put together a meeting mm-hmm. around tracking and privacy and how to help protect people's privacy on the web. And my expectation is that there will be people there, there will be browser vendors there, There will be folks from ad industry and what I'll call more broadly data industry, yeah. Privacy folks. I expect governments will appear there as well.
Excellent.
Hey. All right, we're set? Okay.
Hey, listen.
Thank you for having
Thank
me back.
You. And congratulations.
Thanks.
I mean, that's awesome news.
Okay, thanks.